War Room Impeachment with Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome to War Room Impeachment. It's our special Vox Populi. Our number is 888-480-5646. This is extended episode 93. My wingman, Raheem Kassam, from the United Kingdom, our mother country, is with me today. Jason Miller is down on assignment somewhere in Florida. We're on the John Fredericks Radio Network, on Salem Broadcast Radio Network, on americasvoice.news, streaming in the United States and throughout the world, and Newsmax TV. Want to make sure we can take callers from all over the country. In particular, we love callers from overseas. Our number is 888-480-5646. Let's go to Charlottesville in Mary. Mary in Charlottesville, you're on Vox Populi. How can we help you this morning, ma'am?
Hi. I called a couple weeks ago.
Sure.
And I
told the staff that as soon as I saw you on thing, I'd never forget a caller, Mary.
Oh, well, thank you very much. But I guarantee you there's some GoFundMe accounts being set up right now because it's very lucrative to all of a sudden remember something that's unprovable. So the president really, I don't know if you any of you guys talked to him, but...
But hang, hold up, Mary. Slow down for a second. Slow down for a second. And take that tinfoil hat off. What do you mean there's GoFundMe sites popping up on something you can't prove? The nation and the world awaits. What are you talking about?
What I'm trying to say is, again, the Blasey Ford example, all of a sudden she has this incredible GoFundMe account set up for her security. And as I said before, it has nothing to do with sexual harassment. It's not going to be something like that. But it you know, the next thing you know, they're getting the Time Magazine Courage Award 2020, a year from now. They pull people out of the woodwork that prove it's awful lucrative to be a disturber.
Are you saying that they're coming out, these GoFundMe pages are to fund people that are come out with evidence about the president and about this situation in the Ukraine, like the New York Times did this story? But they're going to administration sources or they're going to sources in Capitol Hill. You're saying that there's people like, as Blasey Ford was to Kavanaugh, someone back from his prep school days, yes. 40 years ago.
Right. They're waiting. I don't know if it's the janitor that's in the White House that found a piece of paper or something. It's going to be something just like, are you kidding me? And the other thing I just wanted to mention, this is really getting dangerous because one thing that sent shivers up my spine is when Amy Klobuchar said this was a global impeachment at the last debate.
What do you mean? She did say that. What do you mean global impeachment? How did you take that? Why did it scare you as a U.S. citizen?
Because I feel, don't call me a tin hat person, but you know what's going on. It's a globalist issue. He's anti-globalist. He's a nationalist. Nobody wanted him president abroad. When she said it was a global impeachment, it really sent shivers up my spine.
Yeah.
This is incredibly dangerous.
Mary, let me ask you, before we let you go, we got other guys we got to get to. No, hang on. Before, is there any one GoFundMe site that you can point to or you want to make people aware of that particularly concerns you?
No. It's just such a pattern. It just happens every time. It's a pattern. And I think these GoFundMe sites, I think they're, money laundering sites. It's like they put somebody up, they make them famous, your famous term. They make them famous. Next thing you know, they need security or they need to move or they need, I think a good portion of these GoFundMe campaigns are money laundering. And I'm really trying to trust the plan, Steve, but what Durham is going to come up with, what Durham and Barr have, is so dangerous, and they are getting desperate.
Mary, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Mary, in Charlottesville, it shows you the concern of the U.S. citizen about the apparatus. I want to go back to Raheem. We'll get to other callers in a second, but let's go back to this Maggie Haberman piece. There you see the inner workings of the interagency process, the interagency consensus. Is Mary correct? And let's leave the Blasey Ford and the GoFundMe sites off to the side for a second. But is she connected two important dots? Klobuchar's, this is a global impeachment, to what Durham and Barr are working on again about people like Brennan. People like they've already said that, you know, Durham is requested all of Brennan's communications. You know, I've said he's got to lawyer up. Is Mary directionally right in her concerns and her issues as an American citizen?
I think that's the correct way of looking at things. This is not just anything to do with how the Democrats in the United States feel about this president, but it's also how the political left all across the world and who funds them all across the world feel about this president, and how this president has stood in the way, not just of their ideological concerns and not just of the things that they've been pushing for decades, but also what comes to the back of it, which is their financial concerns, the things that they are invested in, the things that they have plowed billions of dollars in over the course of decades to change, to shape the economy, you know, to shift manufacturing jobs to China, to make sure that, you know, Britain and the United States move to being, you know, service economies, buying cheap plastic goods from China, so on and so forth. So I think those two things work in tandem. I'm not, by the way, a trust the plan guy. This is something you hear a lot of the QAnon crowd saying. There's no plan, right? You talk to any of these guys on a daily basis, whether it's Attorney General Barr or any of these guys, anybody that deals with these people, and you just run into them in Washington all the time, you know that they are working in the very same way that this war works, in the very same way that the ordinary American works, is, hey, if I'm confronted with a problem in that moment, I'm going to figure out that problem. There's no like long term, okay, here's with the chess piece we're going to move here, and here's the chess piece we're going to move there. That doesn't exist. And my fear is, with a lot of this trust the plan stuff, a lot of people are being led into complacency. There's an election coming up.
This is the reason we started the war. People are saying fake news, witch hunt.
Right.
You say, hey, maybe all of that, maybe elements of that, maybe none of it. But my point is that she was running a process to get to that day before Christmas where she impeached him.
Right.
Right. And she had the process on her side because she had the votes. Because guess what? Hello, elections have consequences. They got out, knocked on doors and had a couple $100 million of Bloomberg money,
right,
and Soros money, and won the House of Representatives in 18.
This is the first time, by the way, we've been covering this this Maggie Haberman New York Times story all morning, and this is the first time I'm seeing this pop up on CNN.
You just
morning.
Observed right before we got on here that it hadn't been on CNN. You said it was because all the starters are still on holiday.
They flashed a headline earlier and never went into any detail. This has now been on the screen for about a minute. They look like they're about to get into it, but here's the thing: during this Christmas period, right, and Christmas and New Year period, they don't have their stars on the research desk. They don't have their stars behind the studio desks reporting the news. And here's what's happening. They don't know what this story is. They can't understand it. They can't get their heads around it. They don't know anything about the historical context of all of this, the timeline of all this. Remember, none of these people have read all the documents. They don't have it in their heads. And more to the point, they don't know. Much like, I'll also admit, by the way, I went through this a couple of times last night. I went through it this morning as well. They don't understand in this New York Times article what's new and what's not. And that's, you know, you can't build a news package around something if you don't know what's new and what's not.
Because unless you've been to the war, unless you've gone through the 7,000 pages of testimony like we have, unless you've broken this down, if you're not into the intimate details of this, you don't know what's already been reported and what hasn't.
Well, and like I said in the original War Room Impeachment show this morning, yeah, Maggie Haberman and her colleagues have done a great job on this story. It bears reading, and some of the details are amazing, but it is also written in a way that they're padding a lot of it out with things that had already been known, and there are only a couple of new nuggets.
Was it padding it out, or is they doing that to connect dots and make sure you've got the full? I mean, Paswali said this is really the first time a timeline has really been laid out publicly.
I think there's both to it. I think they have to do that. I'm not saying that they're like padding it. It's not fluff, right? But what I'm saying is, in order to be taken seriously as a real timeline and a proper story, they can't just drop the news nuggets out. They have to do this whole like 8,000 word thing, and that's what they've come up with. And so that's why I think a lot of these people, CNN and NBC and these guys, are going to struggle to cover it today, because they don't actually know what's new in here.
This is an extended edition of episode 93, War Room Impeachment, Raheem Kassam, Stephen K. Bannon, 30 December, the year of our Lord 2019. We're on a rainy and kind of empty, at least on this side, on the Capitol Hill section. I know that obviously House Intel, Judiciary, and others are beavering away, are trying to get additional evidence. That's quite obvious. Other than that, the Capitol is pretty quiet. Our number, this is Vox Populi, where we take calls from around the nation and the world. 888-480-5646. That's 888-480-5646. I want to go back to something Mary said a moment ago. Her concern on the GoFundMe side, and she said, look, it's kind of a scam. We actually had We Build the Wall, a good experience with the GoFundMe guys. They were very, and they were quite, Mary, to understand, they're quite serious about the use of proceeds going for what you said the use of proceeds going to go for. So I think Brian Kolfage and the team raised, I don't know, $24, $25 million that we've put into the wall, and we're now building. We built our first mile down in El Paso. We're now down with Tommy Fisher and the guys trying to build on three and a half miles down the Rio Grande. As soon as the Butterfly Preserve and others, we get out of federal court where they've kind of tied us up until at least January 6th. But I want to go back to her point. Do you think they're Blasey Fords or others? And I'm not saying just come and go fund me. Her, and she had a very sincere element to her voice, concern about the whole globalist nature of Klobuchar and others, that it's not just American citizens, it's pressures from throughout the world. But do you see the search for evidence to try to really bring evidence to President Trump's impeachment? Do you think, and I teased her with the tinfoil hat, do you see others, they're trying to search, they just got the emails the other day from OMB on the FOIA request. Now you've got the Maggie Haberman piece. You said specifically you can see where they're going to start demanding, and you'll see this today on the panels. The tell will be the CNN panels where they start calling for 50 different separate committees or 50 different separate investigations. Is Mary paranoid here, or do you think she's actually logical as an American citizen to say, hey, I'm nervous because I don't know where the next hit's going to come from?
Look, I think this is the hint, right? The story is the hint. I don't think we need to get into the whole, you know, is there a janitor that they're going to pay off to say something? We're just not there at this thing. You know, this isn't Kavanaugh. This is the President of the United States. This isn't somebody.
But Kavanaugh was, I mean, come on, it was the Supreme Justice. It was the Associate Justice.
Somebody nobody had heard of. So you could use another person nobody had heard of.
When you said it, he had been confirmed to be on the appellate court in Washington.
Okay. Does the average person know what the appellate court in Washington even is?
No. Right? That's inside baseball.
But they do know who the President of the United States is, and you don't need... Look, they've already experienced a massive fail with the whistleblower stuff. It just doesn't cut through. You can't have an anonymous person or somebody nobody's heard of accusing the President of something. How many copies did the anonymous book sell? Like 3? I don't know. It was absolutely ludicrous, right? You are the only owner of a copy.
Peter Navarro, myself, two of them. One's Navarro, one's myself, and we actually paid for it. I didn't take a freebie. I would not take a freebie. Paid for it to go through. We'll do more anonymously.
But here's what CNN's signaling right now with its headline and with what they're saying on CNN right now. Mulvaney's key role in halting Ukraine aid. This is to make Mulvaney one of the key actors, to bring him in front of whether it's testimony in front of the House now, whether they go back to the skiff and they have another private deposition or whatever they do, whether it's to hype up media pressure on him or whether it's to make sure that he's a witness in a Senate trial. They're trying to shift this now to there were these other players that we didn't know about at the time, and now we have to rejig the whole investigation. No. The response from the President, the response from the American people at this point needs to be, you had your time. You had your process. You fumbled it. You got to follow the constitutional process now. Send the articles to the Senate, and let's have the trial.
Our number is 888-480-5646. So it's Vox Populi. You got Raheem Kassam, Stephen K. Bannon, the War on Impeachment Extended Episode 93. Before we go to any more callers, let's go to, I wanted to ask you about some of the other news we couldn't get to. Both Ted Cruz and the Jeff Flake thing is weeks and weeks old is now. Yeah. Walk through what Ted Cruz had to say, at least as reported by Newsweek magazine.
Well, that's the thing. So Ted Cruz, in a sort of throwaway line on Fox News Sunday Morning Futures, he's asked the question, you know, do you think there could be any senators serving as jurors that might vote to remove President Trump in a pending Senate trial? And he says he doesn't think that would happen, but then goes on to say it is certainly possible and there are a couple that could vote that way, but I think anyone voting on the facts, anyone voting on the law, this is a very easy vote. What the Democrats have alleged is not a high crime or misdemeanor, and the articles, he says, are weak. Look, I think that's just a stock answer, right? He's not saying he's had any information that leads him to believe that way. He would be foolish to claim that there is 100% unity when you look at the Murkowskis, when you look at the Romneys, when you look at these guys. That would be a foolish thing to say, is to go up there on Fox and say there are going to be no people who are willing to vote to remove this president. It's a nonsense. At the same time, it is a warning. It's a warning shot that the Senate GOP is not necessarily as united as the House might have been or was, and proved that it was, and that these people need to be worked on. They need to be worked on by their constituents. The reason that a lot of those House Republicans fell into line when they were wavering, when they weren't quite sure whether you might have expected them, a lot of people expected Will Hurd to be a little bit more on the fence. A lot of people expected Peter King
when they were retiring.
They got calls upon calls upon calls from their constituents and from people all around the country saying, don't you dare. And that's what these guys are going
to
need as well.
Okay, go back to the Cruz thing for a second. I realize, but he was talking about acquittal or exoneration, all that, the end of the trial. Now we're talking about getting additional evidence, or first time getting evidence in, the 51 votes they need for that. That's the key. Do you think that the New York Times and the barrage of coverage that this is going to get on MSNBC, on CNN, the amplification network of the information war they're running against President Trump, do you believe that that will make some of these senators wobbly, and they're going to concede to the Democrats of getting voting to allow this type of evidence in?
Yeah, I think there are some things that will make people wobbly. I think people are looking for excuses to be wobbly right now. Why do you say that? Well, Lisa Murkowski, again, it's putting out the feelers, right? When she goes on local television in Anchorage and says that she's disturbed by Mitch McConnell's plan to coordinate with Trump's lawyers on the Senate trial, she's trying to signal that, hey, you know, I'm above the partisan fray on this, and you don't have my vote until and unless I say you have my vote. I think there are certain people looking for wiggle room here, but I think the evidence is on our side. I think the evidence is on the president's side. And I think as long as our side is allowed to walk through this process, and I think the New York Times has done us a big favor in that case, in that sense today, I think people like Murkowski and even people like Mitt Romney will have to side with the president.
Our number is 888-480-5646. If you have a tough time getting through, just continue to try. We're trying to clean up the boards. 888-480-5646. It's Vox Populi. Let's go to the flake, which is, he said it weeks ago, right? He talked about a potential secret ballot. In fact, I think he actually said he or Sass or one of them said they'd actually taken a secret ballot, or if they did, there would be 35 people that vote for conviction. But other people are picking that up now, too. Why is this news today, and where do we stand with this?
Well, this is one of the things that happens across a holiday period, is that older things take precedence and come to the fore. The Atlantic had an article on December the 16th. The Senate impeachment trial could use a little secrecy, leaning heavily on what Jeff Flake had said back in September, where he said at least 35 GOP senators would vote to remove Trump if the vote was private. I don't think that's the case. I think we all know that Jeff Flake is full of schiff. And the CNN opinion piece that rolled off the back of this that came out today is basically, it relies on this Republican quote unquote Republican strategist, Juliana Glover. Now, Juliana Glover,
hater,
big hater,
hater.
I mean, Bushy, worked for John McCain,
hater,
neoconservative through and through. And she wrote a thing November the 12th, 2019, saying there's a surprisingly plausible path to removing Trump from office. Remember, quote-unquote, Republican strategist. And her whole thing is, hey, they should be able to vote on impeachment in secret, a secret ballot. Remember, this is the whole team of people who are saying, we're defending democracy. This is about democracy, the democratic process. This is about transparency. But we want to be able to vote in secret.
Okay, let's go to the call boards. Let's go to South Carolina, the Gamecock State, and Jim. Jim in South Carolina, you got Raheem Kassam, Stephen K. Bannon. How can we help you, sir? Jim, you there? Jim in South Carolina. Okay, we're going to try to get to the boards. Jim in South Carolina, don't want to drop him until we go. Okay, we're going to go to try Dallas. Line two, Pete in Dallas. Pete in Dallas on line two. You got Raheem Kassam, Stephen K. Bannon, Vox Populi. How can we help you, sir?
Hello?
Hey, is this Jim or Pete?
No, this is Ray in Michigan.
Hey, Ray, how you doing, sir? We want to apologize. We've got a little bit of remote. We're going to get my producer right there. Dan is going to get all over the call board. Ray in Michigan, how you doing, brother?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing good. How you been?
Hey, I talked to Senator Cruz on Maria's show on Sunday.
Okay.
And he was kind of going over the procedure for what happens when this trial goes to the Senate. And Roberts is going to have to ask the question. He's going to be the one that's going to be grilling any witnesses. The senators are going to just have to sit there and keep their mouth shut. I think at this point what McConnell needs to do is get together with Murkowski and Romney and any of these dissident senators and say, okay, we're preparing for trial. We need to know what questions you want Justice Roberts to ask the witnesses and what witnesses you want. Let's get them involved in the process. If they're the ones that have questions that don't know how they can vote, then okay, what are your questions? And who do you want us to...
Well, didn't Senator Cruz say the Chief Justice asks questions that are given to them from the jurors? The senators write the questions down. They can't ask a question, but they get their questions to the Chief Justice. Is that not what Ted Cruz said?
Yes, and exactly. But as in any trial, and McConnell's a lawyer, so he understands the whole process, I think they need to do interviews with Murkowski, with Romney, and any other senators and say, here's your chance to submit questions so that we can prepare what witnesses we want in this trial. And I think McConnell, as soon as they're ready to go, I think he's don't worry about having the articles run over from the House and the manager. He needs to go on TV and say, listen, we're going to start this thing on Monday. Justice Roberts will be there. And Nancy, if you want to send somebody over with managers or whatnot, you better get going because we're going to start rippling
out. And Ray, in 10 seconds, we got about 15 seconds. Do you want a long trial with witnesses for President Trump, or you want it quick and dirty? As soon as you got the votes, get the vote and get out of there.
Whatever gets the job done.
Ray in Michigan, thank you very much. That's a practical deplorable right there. Okay, we're going to take a short commercial break on Vox Populi. Our number is 888-480-5646. That's 888-480-5646. Raheem and Steve on extended version 93 of War Room Impeachment. Go to warroom.org, our website. We're going to be back with your calls in just a moment.
War Room Impeachment. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment, episode 93, the extended episode 93, live from Capitol Hill. It's Vox Populi, Raheem Kassam, Stephen K. Bannon. The phone board is lit up. I'm going to try to be a little quicker this time, but I had a lot of stuff to go through with Raheem. Let's go to Dallas and Pete. Pete in Dallas, you're on 888-480-5646. How you doing, Pete? How can we help you today?
Hey, Mr. Bannon, it's an honor to be on the show. I'm a big fan of the whole team, really.
Well, thank you.
And I just wanted to comment on, I've read actually several books on the Trump administration, like Fear by Bob Woodward and Devil's Bargain, and recently I read Fire and Fury, and it seems to me like the theme is that Trump hired people that are like the opposite of what he believes. And this is what's caused so many problems.
One of the problems, I think, is that, you know, his America First national security agenda, in particular, I've got right in front of me, we've got the Anonymous book, which are clearly all people that said they're Republicans, and also Peter Bergen's Trump and His Generals, which also talks about, you know, General Mattis, General Kelly, General McMaster, and even others and you can see this in this New York Times article with John Bolton, who was, you know, who's a good guy and has been part of the Republican establishment for many, many years and been a guy that's really been a force, I think, overall for good, where he disagrees with it. So part of it is just we have a very thin bench on, quote unquote, people that, you know, agree with the president's policies.
Yeah, that's a great point. And also, I mean, it seems like he's got Jared and Ivanka, unfortunately, kind of calling the shots at this point. And it's just someone like you back in there. And I almost wonder if that's possible.
No. Pete, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate it. And I appreciate you hanging on. Don't wish that back on me. No. I think the world of the president, world of his policies, we try to support this every day, but I thank you for the call. But no, I'm very happy sitting here with Raheem and Jason Miller and doing what I can do to do the agenda. But Pete gets to a very important point, and I want to go back to this Maggie Haberman because I think it illustrates what Pete's talking about. One of the issues in the first couple of years also goes to, quite frankly, the Washington Post article I keep talking about by Jeff Stein on the populist turn. Pete's thing is, how can you get these policies in there? Economic populism, how can you get America first? If you are going back to either people who are Democrats or Republican establishment people, because you just don't have the bench of talent that's there because people haven't served in the government. So in this latest iteration, because this New York Times article is going to drive the news cycle and it's going to drive their look to get other evidence in, do you think Pete's got a point, Raheem?
Yeah, I'm not sure I care about people who've had experience in government. What I care about is how did we possibly expect? Look, this thing, it didn't come out of nowhere, but it snuck up on us fast. The victory wasn't planned for, really, in earnest, right? Not the planning you would hope for.
Plan for the victory because you're so far behind. You don't think, you know, only a few nut jobs like myself.
How many
100% metaphysical certitude you're going
to
win, right?
How many thousand spaces were there that needed to be filled day one of the
administration? There's 4,000. So, Pete, here's it is. There's 4,000 billets that you get to fill, and I think there's 1,000 of those, or close to 1,000 of those, are Senate confirmed.
Yep.
So that's what you, and the National Security Council at the time, when General Flynn brought the thing, was 450 billets. Now, yep. I said, that's got to be downsized dramatically. But you just, I think in the National Security Council, in the 450, I think there were 90 political appointees. Mm-hmm. That's probably more than you have total American first people in the national security apparatus today.
Now, I'll say something, and you don't have to. You can totally distance yourself from my comments here, Steve, because I don't want to get you in trouble with some of your friends. But here's what happens when you bring the RNC into the hiring process. You know, they win the election in 2016. And remember, the RNC didn't want it to happen under Trump. The staffers were reluctant to go along with it. Many of these people on the Hill, many of these people in Congress, many of these people who I talk to and work with every day, they were reluctant Trumpers, okay? But when the RNC gets involved in the hiring process, and when you have a person, basically two people, who are in charge of the hiring process, especially for the White House, you have an Obama holdover hiring people in the White House, and you have the personnel office being run by Never Trump people, when you have that taking place, the 4,000 might not seem a lot of numbers to people out there. Like, hey, there are clearly 4,000 intelligent patriots out there.
Yeah.
But here's
the
thing. The RNC comes in. They want to get jobs for the boys. They want to get jobs for their buddies, jobs for all the chiefs of staff that have done their time on the Hill, that have done their time working as interns, that have done their time all over the shop. Who, by the way, a lot of these people who are senior communications people or whatever, I wouldn't give them a job as an intern in the war room, let alone have them running government departments. It just wouldn't happen. But you have to play the cards you're dealt. And that's why we ended up in this situation. That's not to pick on anyone in particular.
The one thing I say, remember, first steps into the campaign, we brought Ryan and Sean Spicer and Katie Walsh. You have to pull together. I realize it's a coalition, but it has to pull together. In 2020, folks, it's going to be a mobilization election. We've got to pull together. So I don't totally buy that.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't totally buy it. And I do think that there are some talented people. I do believe President Trump's now got his sea legs and now sees what he wants to do. Let's get Raheem off the hook here and get additional calls. Who's our next victim?
We have Zinni in New York.
Vinny or
Is
Zinni?
Is it Vinny or Zinni? I'm not sure.
I'm betting on Vinny.
Zinni?
Zinni?
All right, we'll try it. Line one.
Yeah, Steve, you win. It's Vinny.
It's Vinny.
Hey, Vinny, come on.
I see Innie in New York. I know it's going to be Vinny.
Hold it. Vinny, let me tell you something. I changed it to Zinni. As Zinni, you're unforgettable. How you doing, sir?
That's true. As Zinni, I am unforgettable.
How you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine, gentlemen. How you guys doing? I hope you're right, and I hope you had a great Christmas and Boxing Day. The only thing I want to bring up is that if we haven't learned one thing, it's that the presidential election is not the only important election that there is.
Amen.
I think we were riding a high on the presidential election that people just sat back, come the other elections, your congressional elections, and said, oh, we got Trump in there now. He's going to fix everything. And it could be farther from the truth. These Democrats are a danger to our country. They have to get out of the House. We have to win the House back. We talk about permanent impeachment process. This puts an end to it. If we could just take back the House, get a few more seats in the Senate.
Vinny, hang on a second. Hang on a second, because you've hit something that's very important. I want to drill down on this for a second. You're a deplorable. I can tell that. You're from New York. Here's what I don't understand, because in 18, I kept saying, hey, the House is everything. We made this film, Trump at War. Raheem was a big part of that. We went around the country, and I showed this. The movie The Brink shows between when I'm not in Europe, I was, you know, going around to every one of these 30 districts we had to hold. People kept telling me, and I said, hey, it's a referendum on Trump. He is on the ticket. You have to be out. But you could tell there was a noticeable lack of enthusiasm. The left was fired up because they realized Trump's a transformative president. They realized that Trump is bringing fundamental change to this country, and that particularly with the judiciary and the deconstruction of the administrative state, he is going to be in their personal lives 10, 20, and 30 years from now. So under the thing of orange man bad, they take Bloomberg's money and Soros's money, and they build up a field staff and a ground game to go door to door. Why is it that the deplorables, why is it that the Trump, the real hardcore Trump people don't understand what you understand, that these midterm elections are really referendums on the presidency, and if you lose the House, you essentially lose almost all of it?
You know, I don't know why particularly. I mean, I know what's important to me, and I know the House was a big vote. I went out and I voted for who I wanted to vote for. I mean, even in Staten Island, which is basically Republican, we let Max Rose get in there. I mean, that blew my mind. And speaking of Bloomberg's money, when I tell you that come a few weeks before Election Day, every commercial was a Max Rose commercial. He was in your face constantly, and somehow, some way, Staten Island voted for him in. Was the biggest shock to me of anything.
Well, listen, we specifically went to Staten Island. We went to Staten Island because I understand it had been a bruising primary. We went to Staten Island, and it was a kind of an establishment candidate. But we kept telling people, Max Rose has been hand-selected. He's a combat veteran. The guy looks like a million bucks. He's got a real way he connects with people. And I kept telling people, this Max Rose, and I don't care if it's an R+6 or R+8, and Trump carried it by so many. This guy's real, and he's got money in back of him because it's nonstop ads in the most expensive media market in the country, and Max Rose won. And Max Rose, by the way, is one of the dirty 30 that, and he's out saying, hey, I'm going to vote for impeachment. So he's throwing down right now that Vinny, you and other guys of Staten Island are not going to be able to remove him from office.
No, I mean, it's true. I mean, it shocked me more than anything, Steve. I still can't believe that he actually won it. He voted for the impeachment. I think if we have not learned anything, then it's all on us. We have nobody to blame but us. We are like the MMA fighter who hits the guy, knocks him down, has him dead to rights, gets cocky, lets him get up, and then the guy swings a wild left hook and knocks you for a loop. And that's what happened to us. And we have got to learn from this. We have got to take the power back, especially in the House, a few more seats in the Senate, like I said, and this will pretty much, hopefully, mostly all go away.
If it does not happen
in 2020, we cannot blame anybody but ourselves. We cannot blame the Democrats. We cannot blame the socialists. We have to blame us. We have to get out there and vote the same way we got out there and voted for President Trump, with the same enthusiasm that we did for President Trump.
Vinny, one last thing before we let you go. And by the way, I want to get this call up on the site because this is perfect. I mean, this is like it's scripted. And we keep saying one of the things about people on the right and the deplorables is that their lives are not dedicated to politics. They're not, you know, cause people like some people on the left are. And I keep saying, hey, it's just not one election. They're not going to pat you on the head and toss you the keys and say, hey, Trump won, you know, by drawing an inside straight in 16. Here you guys go. You take the country in whatever direction you want. It's a series of elections. What do you tell your fellow deplorables that they're going to have to do in order to save the country?
Grassroots, tell your friends, tell people who have not voted before, who are on the fence of who they're going to vote for, what is at stake? What is at stake is our Constitution being smashed on, freedom of speech being taken away, our right to bear arms being taken away. You see that's going on in Virginia right now, what's happening. If we want to save our Constitution, we want to be a republic, we want to be a populist nationalist nation, that they have to get out there and talk to the people in their districts, in their communities, in their job space about what is at stake right here. We cannot be a socialist country. We will never be a socialist country as far as I'm concerned or as long as I walk the face of this earth. But I will do everything in my power to tell everybody I know, whether they're liberal, Democrats, Republicans, conservatives, this is at stake. I understand your feelings and your priorities, but the left has gone totally far, far left. They've been talking about socialism. They're talking about destroying the Constitution. I don't want to be another Cuba. I do not want to be another Venezuela. You bring up all these points. That's never worked anywhere. We have to take back control in order to keep this country great.
Vinny, thank you very much. God bless you. Thank you very much. I got to tell you, Mary in Charlottesville, Ray in Michigan, and Vinny in Staten Island, this is the reason we do the show. This is the reason the guys back in the men and women in the boiler room work so hard, is that an enlightened citizenry is the most powerful force on this earth. Raheem Kassam, who we got next?
We have Richmond in Washington State on line three.
Richard in Washington State?
It says Richmond, but it might be Richard.
Richard in Washington State. Washington State, Rich, are you on?
Yes.
Hey, how you doing, sir?
Hi, Steve.
Hey. How can we help you?
I hope Raheem was talking about how some of these people shouldn't even be interns. Back when I was in college, there was a doctor named Dr. Peter that came out with the Peter Principle, which basically, in a nutshell, means in large corporations, people go up, go from within and go up and eventually reach their level of incompetence.
Why is that? Explain the Peter. Hang on, Richards. Explain the Peter Principle to the people in large organizations. And like, they eventually rise to the level of which their marginal utility after that is zero. Correct.
Correct. They've reached their level of incompetence. Basically, is what the quote would be. But it's really apparent in things like the military or in look at the VA hospital situations and things like that, where these people just keep getting up higher and higher, especially in this new state thing with these bureaucracies.
So how did you see...
For an example, look at...
Let's go back to the testimony against the president. I take it you watched some of that, or at least came to the war room and saw some of it. As you saw Fiona Hill, as you saw Ambassador Taylor, as you saw Kern Vindman, did that remind you of the Peter Principle?
Yes, exactly. And also, on my other point, I feel that this business about having House rules and then Senate rules and stuff like that, I was under the impression that the rules were the Constitution. And basically, I think what the Senate should do is just go into regular rules of judicial order, take every one of the witnesses from the House, that's their evidence, and just make hearsay objections and, just object to all the stuff that was brought in there fairly, considering Schiff was a prosecutor. He knows what the rules are.
And so you're saying, you're arguing for a pretty quick trial. That's an afternoon. You get your evidence is your evidence, which is not a lot. You can't put any of the hearsay in there. And then you're Mitch McConnell. Then you vote and you go home.
Yeah, you take out every bit of evidence, including the presumption that Trump wanted to make a deal.
Yep.
From the bald guy, I forget his name.
Ambassador Sondland.
The only evidence that's left is Trump told him, I want nothing, and take everything out of the whole thing. And there you go. It's like they have no case.
Richard, we got to jump. Richard in Washington, fantastic call. Our number is 888-480-5646. That's 888-480-5646. I take it that is the Is that a truck that's outside our studio? Okay, we're here in Capitol Hill.
It's the Red Bull delivery.
It's quiet except for the Red Bull delivery truck. Richard in Washington, thank you very much. Before we go to the next call, 888-480-5646. I am going to pick up the pace. To Richard's point, do you see that happening? He's saying, hey, take what you got. You got put the rules of evidence to it. Take it to the Senate. Schiff's got what he's got, which is like one fifth of what that 7,000 pages you and the team went through. Present it, vote, go home.
That's an ideal process.
But does that exonerate Donald Trump? I understand what you're saying. That's a win, but is it the win you need?
No. Look, the ideal process is the one where you get all the information out. You call all the witnesses. You have this out.
We
properly.
Get the whistleblower. We got Brennan. We got all of them.
The second most ideal process is the one that Richard is talking about, right? Which is, and then the last one.
You're saying Richard's living in the real world because you're not going to get the first.
I don't know if you're not going to get the first. I mean, by sheer force of will, I think we flummoxed the Democrats and flummoxed their whole process so far. I just don't know why we wouldn't get the first one if we put our shoulders to the wheel. It's a question as to whether or not the people out there and the people that are their representatives want to put their shoulders to the wheel on it. Hey, it's not for me to tell you how to govern your country. It's up to you guys. I'm just here to provide the information, right?
The numbers. Go ahead.
But the least... good of all of these possibilities is the one the Democrats are now aiming at, which is we're going to pull this away into a different investigative process.
You see that happening.
Absolutely. We're going to put this other budget thing in, put the articles of impeachment on hold. They're on the back burner. We're going off to this other thing now. We've got that.
So
in
you're called shot right now. You're saying you're going to see momentum coming off the Haberman New York Times article to say additional investigations, put impeachment on hold for right now. We're not going to deliver it to the Senate. We're going to go do additional information inquiries.
We're 2 days away from a new year, and we are about 2 hours away from a new Democrat strategy being announced.
888-480-5646. It's Vox Populi. You get to speak to Stephen K. Bannon, but more importantly, you get to speak to the sage. That would be Raheem Kassam. Let's get another call before we get a pop. Who we got here?
We got Sue in Maryland on line 4.
Sue in Maryland, you're on Vox Populi. You got Steve Bannon, Raheem Kassam. How you doing, ma'am?
Oh, I'm doing great, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm the one who called about a month ago with my impromptu poll at the Ravens and 49ers game.
Sure, it was great.
And, yeah. Okay, so I was just recently at Disney World for 10 days. And one of the rides that we went on is called the Hall of Presidents. And here's this cross-section of America, people with their children, Christmas time. So you're seeing all these animatronic presidents. So Abraham Lincoln gets a couple of applause. Ronald Reagan, the place goes pretty crazy for him, for the statue. Barack Obama, they put the light on him, gets a few boos, and that's it. When they put the light on Donald Trump, and he starts taking his oath of office, place went so crazy, I thought I needed earplugs. They were hooping and hollering and cheering for this animatronic Donald Trump. So when I went outside, I was asking some of the people, you know, what do you think about this impeachment? Because your reaction was so positive towards Donald Trump. And they said, oh, we love him. We don't care what the stupid people in Congress are doing. We're voting for him. And if we could talk to him, we would tell him, please don't forget about immigration, because a lot of people had their kids in their strollers. And they said, we don't want our children to have to live in a world where we don't speak English, where we're paying taxes for people who have no legal right to be here. Please don't let him forget about his pledge for immigration. And so then I asked a lot of people about DACA, and nobody was supporting DACA. And they were all saying, we don't know where people are getting the idea that the American public supports DACA. We do not support DACA. And but they love Donald Trump. And I thought, what better place to do a little bit of polling other than Disney World after that reaction to an animatronic Donald Trump?
Hey, Sue, can I ask you a favor? Could you put, we want to put Sue on hold. Thank you very much. And don't hang up, though, Sue. We want to put Sue on hold. I want to get Sue. We want one of our guys to interview Sue and talk about her trip. We're going to put this up on the site, but also want to know more about your trip. Sue, thank you so much. You're a great caller with information. I want to make sure one of the guys, we get the number for Sue, producer Dan, so that we can do a deeper dive on her trip to Disney World, because I think that's kind of anecdotal account that that says a lot. Okay, our number is 888-480-5646. 888-480-5646. Raheem Kassam, Stephen K. Bannon. Before we go to a top of the, and we want everybody to hold, we're going to get to all you guys and clean the boards up. Raheem, how do people get 24/7 up to date with your and Jason Miller's current thinking?
Well, by the way, I love that story. And the website is warroom.org, by the way, to answer your question. But I love that story because who are the people that are going to Disney, right? Versus the people who are going to Biarritz or whatever it is.
Or to the Caribbean, right? They're not going to...
Disney is MAGA country.
MAGA country. Boy, that must blow up the leadership at Disney because the executives are certainly not. Okay. It's War Room Impeachment, Vox Populi, 888-480-5646. We'll be back with all of your calls in just a moment.
Jason Miller and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment, the 30th of December, the year of our Lord, 2019. It's only 2 days left in the decade of disruption, and the curtain's about to rise on the Roaring Twenties. We're live on Capitol Hill with extended episode 93, Vox Populi, where we take your calls from throughout the nation and the world. Raheem Kassam. We're here on the John Fredericks Radio Network and America's Voice.news nationwide and globally, also on Salem Radio, and of course, Newsmax TV. Let's go to the boards. Who's our next caller, Raheem?
It's Andrew. We have Andrew in Long Island in New York. Andrew on line three. Andrew, are you with us?
This is Christine.
Oh, hey, Christine. How are we doing? Hey, you got to cut the radio off down in the back. Hello?
Oh, hey, it's Andrew.
Oh, hey, Andrew. How you doing? Sorry about that. Looks like I had a mix-up. How you doing, Andrew?
I'm well. How are you? I just wanted to mention, I'm a Christian, an evangelical Christian from North Fork of Long Island, you know, in Lee Zeldin's district over there. But I just wanted to give a plug, I guess, to an old movie and a new movie coming out for Trevor Loudon. I don't know if you guys are familiar. A few years back, he came out with the movie Enemies Within, and I just got fired up, so I decided to call because one of those guys was just a patriot. And, he was talking about one thing that you talked about a while back about the Muslim Brotherhood Terrorist Designation Act, which didn't go through. And another solution that he was saying for all this stuff that's going on from within, when you see the AOCs and all that, is to pass a bill going through so that to sit on any congressional committee, you'd have to pass an FBI background check, because he was checking and saying into all this stuff that probably 25% of the people wouldn't even pass this FBI background check, and it would help.
This is Trevor Loudon who said this.
Yeah, he did the Enemies Within. He looked into.
I know Trevor very well. But how did he derive that 25% of the people couldn't pass a elected members of Congress couldn't pass a background check? Did he have any data for that, or was that he just extrapolated?
Well, he was going into, you know, a connection to their background, similar things to do with the Muslim Brotherhood Terrorist Designation Act, like Andre Carson and stuff like that. Some of the videos that they play, like stuff like Allah will not allow you to stop us and stuff like that. That's not really where I intended to go. But anyways, he's coming out with a new movie, The Enemies Within the Church, kind of talking about what you guys were talking about with the Soros-backed stuff and just how it's playing into that. I know you guys were talking about the Christianity Today and everything. So I don't know. I just wanted to mention that.
Andrew, let me ask you for a second. You're an evangelical. How does the Christianity Today walk us through? Because now they're saying, hey, the evangelical movement's going to be split. Is it 5%, 10%, 20%? People are saying nobody listens to these left-wing evangelicals. You're an evangelical Christian. How do you parse this?
Well, from what I see, a lot of, I'm in, like, you know, a non-denominational, almost a charismatic church, and a lot of my people in my kind of churches are kind of asleep to a lot of this. Nobody's sounding the alarms, but if you look to the Southern Baptist Convention, which is the biggest denomination that was and is holding things together, they're cracking at the seams. They're splitting. People, all big pastors are falling. The doctrine is being split. You see all these different things, and even the young, they're going down to the young, the youth evangelicals and these crew. They change the names of them. They have all this politically correct stuff, and the stuff's been going on for a while, back to, you know, the 70s and 80s. Joseph Fletcher, they had this, it seems that they've had this planned out for a while to attack the churches, because if they attack the churches, they split America, and that's what, you know, that's what works. So I think it's, I don't know the percentages, but it seems like it's creeping, and it's a lot, you know, it seems like it was a lot more, and they're starting to get a hold, but I know that Jesus is going to win in the end, and his people are, but it's in the flesh, it plays out. It could be kind of scary, it sounds. But,
Andrew, hang on a second. Before we let you go, let me ask you a question. One of the big things on a mobilization election, and everybody's talking about 2020, and I believe this is going to be a mobilization like 18 was, that you've got to get your base out, your base plus. One of the big question marks is evangelicals who are not registered to vote. We know that President Trump, at least historically, has gotten an overwhelming, I think the highest ever, 81%. As you look at your church, which is charismatic or just around, what percentage, and you said, hey, they're really tied to spiritual things, they're not really involved in politics, not really involved that much in that type of the materialistic side of daily life. What percentage of evangelicals would you say in either your church or extrapolated out to evangelicals overall are not registered to vote?
That's a tough question. You know, the socioeconomics of it is, like, where I live in the churches that are, it's Long Island, so it's higher socioeconomic, but in general. But so I think, I don't know. I feel like a lot of them are registered, and a lot of them are going to vote Republican. And it goes back to the Eric Metaxas thing of, like, a lot of people were skeptical, but, like, if you look at the Bonhoeffer thing, it's like Bonhoeffer was, involved in this assassination attempt on Hitler. And it seemed like, oh, well, that's, you know, Christianity.
Real quickly, Andrew, hang on. Real quickly, tell our audience who Bonhoeffer is. Why is he important?
I don't know the full history of who Bonhoeffer is, but he was involved. He's a German. He was involved in the plot to assassinate Hitler to bring freedom to end the war. I don't know how much detail you want me to go into, but it was just the Christian thing. It's like, oh wow, this is murder. It seems like a sticky thing. The same with the immigration thing.
So we only asked tough questions here. We got to ask you to pick a number in your best estimate as you look around the evangelical church. What percentage do you think are your fellow parishioners or the fellow people you know in the evangelical church? How many of those are not registered to vote?
I mean, not registered.
Percentage?
I don't know. Maybe 30. It's a complete guess. I have no idea. 30%.
Okay. Andrew in Long Island, thank you very much. Fantastic call. Our number is 888-480-5646. He goes to a very important point. This is part of the Trump base. The gun owners, you know, the NRA Second Amendment guys, the evangelical church, the kind of grassroots Tea Party groups and the populist nationalists. That's the foundational elements of the Trump coalition. Our number is 888-480-5646. This Christianity Today is clearly an assault trying to break off. Look, if they feel they can break off 5 or 10%, that's where you've got some of these establishment Republicans are forming groups together. They're taking ads out. They're taking ads out about President Trump's character. They're taking, and I think Bloomberg's doing the same thing. They're taking ads out. They're trying to carve away at the coalition. They're trying to see where the seams of this are, Raheem.
I want to throw the question back at you, though, because we talk a lot about the massive efforts by the Democrats over the last couple of years, whether it's Bloomberg, Soros, going into voter registration, and the blockbuster headline that we had out when we had the John McLaughlin on the show, and he said, look,
could be 160 million people vote.
160 million people might be voted. How many do you think in that camp are not registered to vote?
Well, I've seen analysis. Somebody said 30 to 40 million. I think you say a large bulk, plurality of evangelicals, because they have not been engaged in politics for so long, are not registered to vote. There's a lot of evangelicals who are just not registered to vote. And I think it goes back to Andrew. You know, he's a charismatic church guy. A lot of these people are just not that engaged in day-to-day politics. Their lives, the center of their lives, are just in different places. And the point is that, hey, this is a fight. This is a throwdown. This is going to be a, this is going to be a mobilization election. You've got to get every possible vote out there. People should not missed a point that was 79,000 votes in five counties in three states that gave President Trump the presidency. You know, Hillary Clinton, you know, in New York and California ran up some pretty big numbers. She was a couple of million votes ahead. So but he won the Electoral College. This one right now is going to be intense. Michael Moore said the other day that President Trump, given the Electoral College, given what he's seeing in Michigan and other places over the Midwest, he believes that President Trump wins because President Trump's base is more solidified than it's ever been. I do believe that this impeachment process is making them more solidified. You saw Sue in Maryland talk about going down to Disney World over the Christmas holidays, and people are even more fired up. But when you have to get, you know, this is going to be mobilizing, getting every vote out you can possibly get out. The evangelicals are obviously a central thing, and it shouldn't be lost on anybody. I think January 3rd, I think this Friday, and correct me if I'm wrong, Raheem, we actually talked about you might be going down there, or if Jason's there, it goes. There's going to be a rally for President Trump in Miami, I believe, about evangelicals, that they're trying to make a statement that this Christianity Today thing is not where evangelicals are, but evangelicals are an absolute centerpiece of the Trump coalition. We want to clean up the boards here for a second.
Well, before we go back to the call,
888-480-5646. It's Vox Populi. We're taking calls from around the nation and the world. 888-480-5646. We're here till noon. It's Raheem Kassam and Stephen K. Bannon.
I want to just, before we go back to the call board as well, tee up something as well. Maybe we can ask some of the callers about this new Politico article that just came out. Headline, Trump Obama tie for America's most admired man.
Hello. What are you talking about? Politico had to write that? They must have killed the editors earlier.
Can you imagine?
Must have killed the editors.
And the reporters, quite frankly, having to type that out. Let me just give people a little bit of a...
Who are the reporters? Maybe we give individual heckles to guys.
Quint Forgy?
Oh, yeah, sure. I don't know.
President Donald Trump and...
He clearly had the duty over the weekend.
President Trump and former President Barack Obama have tied for the title of America's most admired man, according to Gallup's annual survey, marking the first time the current commander-in-chief has achieved the distinction and the 12th consecutive first place showing for his immediate predecessor. 18% of U.S. adults nominated Trump when asked which man living today in any part of the world they admired most, while another 18% identified the most recent Democratic president. Last year, 13% of Americans chose Trump as the most admired man, and 14% picked him in 2017, the first year of his presidency. He placed second to Obama in both of those surveys, now tied for first. And on a year like this past year, the left, the Democrats, Politico, Quint Forgy, they wouldn't have been expecting this.
Okay, what's the over and under of when once CNN's got that in the Chiron? When is CNN going to have that in the Chiron? MSNBC, is Lawrence O'Donnell's show going to lead tonight with that? That President Trump is the most... they literally will vapor lock before they say... The words come out of their mouth, he's tied with Barack Obama as most admired.
Anywhere in the world, it's going to say, the Chiron on CNN is going to say, Obama, the most admired man in U.S., comma, Trump mentioned.
Well, see, that's what they're going to say. 5%, a 40% increase or something like that? I could do my math here.
Yeah, it's a big increase.
In a year, he was impeached. President Trump, I think the impeachment thing's working. His strategy, hey, I think it helps.
And by the way, this wasn't done back in August. It wasn't done in October. This was done in early December. The impeachment process was already culminating at that point.
That was worse as things started to turn after that. That was really at the high tide of the close to the high tide of the negativity.
And if you go into the numbers as well, it's remarkable. Okay, sure. It's mostly along party lines in terms of Democrats and Republicans and who they're choosing as their most admired man. But the independents numbers are very close. Barack Obama 12% among independents and Donald Trump 10% among independents.
Here's what I want to do is that we're gonna layer on of for the next couple of days when we do these shows that are not the specials on the decade in the Roaring Twenties. Is I want to layer on from the War Room who was actually testifying on the days that the President Trump got the poll was done. Then you can tell, hey, Fiona Hill, your testimony really wasn't that hot. It's quite amazing. I imagine President Trump's going to tweet this out in a while. Let's go. You want to go to the boards for a second?
Yeah, I want to go back to the callers. We got Sean in New Hampshire. Let's see, on line three, Sean in New Hampshire. Welcome to Vox Populi. Sean, do we have you? Sean?
Sean in New Hampshire.
No Sean in New Hampshire. No Sean in New Hampshire. Going once, going twice.
Yeah, Raheem.
There you go.
Hey, how you doing?
How you doing this, Sean?
Sorry, guys. I didn't hear you first. So, Steve, I called in like 2 weeks ago, and you said Raheem wasn't there to talk about what was going on in the State Department with Ukraine and us training revolutionaries to overthrow these governments.
Okay.
And you said Raheem was more of the person on that process. So I wanted to ask him, Raheem, do you know about Civil Society 2.0?
That rings a bell. Run out of the, refresh us.
It's run out of the State Department, and it's where we train people how to use social media
yes.
in order to create revolutions and overthrow their governments. And we set up anti-corruption places in, like, say, Ukraine. We get them to change their constitution. We bring in NGOs, and we basically make them a vassal state of the United States. We've done it in Egypt, Ukraine,
yep.
Libya. It's going on in Chile. And I'm wondering how in the hell we can stop this.
This goes back to a lot of the Arab Spring stuff, right, Sean?
Yes. It started under Hillary Clinton and 2011. And
Sean, don't be any under misconception. This goes back way earlier than 2011. This was in the works for some time. It really took root in 2009. That was the first time I think Secretary Clinton got up there and talked about this Civil Society 2.0 project. You're absolutely right, Sean. It's practical training on basically how to overthrow your government. Funded by the U.S. State Department. They've even had, like, hackathons, right? Like, live in person, how to build blogs, how to launch text messaging campaigns, how to develop online communities using apps like WhatsApp and things like that, and using those millions upon millions of U.S. taxpayer dollars that go into this, Sean. Am I right? Am I on the right lines here?
Yeah, it's hundreds of millions, if not more. Wow.
Sean, thank you very much for the call. I want to just because other guys get to. Let me go to Sean's point for it. Yeah. Thank you so much. This is one of the things that was back in, what is it, the Green Revolution in Tehran.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a bad thing?
Oh, I don't know. I don't respect the premise of the question. I don't think there is a good or a bad when it comes to this. Because
no, I think Sean asked the question, how do we stop this? And,
yes.
And I think for a significant plurality of the America First, they don't want any involvement in any of this. They think this is just what causes problems. This is more that we're trying to work out the imperial project, right? And then the question gets to be, are you helping the guy? Can you help the guys in Hong Kong? Can you help the guys in Beirut overthrow Hezbollah? Can you help the guys in Hong Kong overthrow CCP? Is the Green Revolution, wasn't this all part of that got that going, that the Tehran, you know, the mullahs could have been toppled, you know, Obama's criticized by people, it could have been done. The question, I think, to Sean is that, hey, I want to shut it all down. I don't want to spend hundreds of millions of dollars. I'd rather spend hundreds of millions of dollars. If we're going to spend it, I'd rather spend it training people in inner cities to get tech jobs with American companies instead of spending this where you're overseas causing problems. So the question back to you is this a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't want to get into that because it can be a good thing.
You know, the callers get tough questions, so do you.
No, fine, and I'm prepared to answer them. But
you won't.
I won't answer the question as it's framed. I will answer the question as it should be framed, I'd make a great politician.
No. You learned Bannon 101. Pivot away from it.
No. Bannon 101 is Socratic method, right? Which is ask a question on the back of a question. No, the question should be, is this currently being deployed in a way that benefits U.S. Foreign policy, U.S. national security, and domestic policy, things that are here in the United States that people are concerned about? And the answer to that question is, on all those counts, is no. This has not been used in a way that helps the United States. In fact, it has created more wars, it has created more civil wars, it has created more civil strife, it has created conditions under which the Muslim Brotherhood has been able to take root, it has trained Muslim Brotherhood leaders across the Middle East and North Africa, is replaced, maybe autocratic, maybe dictatorial regimes, but it's replaced them with Islamist regimes. That's, you know, the answer to the question in that regard is no, it's not particularly a good thing. It would be a good thing if we were using it to, let's say, help a real anti-totalitarian protesters like in Hong Kong. It would be good if we helped get rid of people like Hezbollah. It would work in the U.S. national security interest.
Okay, this is the question. In the Trump, if you had Civil Society 2.0, and you and Sean obviously know much more about this than I do, if it had been in the globalist project of the Clinton State Department, John Kerry State Department, Barack Obama administration, does it make sense as a construct to even have this in a Trump administration, in a Trump Trump State Department as a construct?
Yes, I can see it. I can see civil society 3.0 being a much pared down version of this, and being very specifically targetedly used to help U.S. national security interests. In Hong Kong, for instance, when you're fighting the Chinese, when the Chinese are the number one adversary of the United States, and they're doing all this stuff in Hong Kong, which, by the way, isn't a million miles away from the West. Remember, it was a British outpost. It is a strategically important point, and it's a place in which we have a moral imperative, because these people are not Islamists, they're not Muslim Brotherhood operatives, then yes, in something like that, it is very useful. But to use it in the way that the Hillary Clinton State Department used it, to use it in Ukraine, to use it in Middle East and North Africa, absolutely not. In fact,
let's go to Sean's point. Sean goes, hey, I want this shut down. I think this should be shut down. What would you answer to him?
Fine, shut it down and then start from scratch and build it from the ground up. You know, the
difference in your 3.0 and 2.0 is we're focused on better, more the guys that are real bad guys. Is that it?
I don't think that that's a calculation. It's
not a humanitarian expeditionary force all around to get us in Libya and to get us all these other places.
Well, that's obviously true. But the thing that needs to guide all of this stuff is, where is it in the U.S. national security interest? Where is it in the America First national security interest? That's the starting point on all of this. Not, hey, there are some people in the streets protesting that we don't really know that much about, but we should probably help them because we don't like, the dictator of X country or whatever it is, right? Like, here's the difference. It's, are you concerned about democracy for democracy's sake, which is where a lot of this Hillary Clinton State Department stuff came from? It's the idea of one man, one vote, but then what? Or are we concerned about what helps the United States foreign policy interests around the world? And that's something that the Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama State Department didn't put at the center of everything.
Does the United Kingdom have a system like this, the Civil Society 2.0?
Yes, there is certainly a digital democracy element to the foreign aid budget. There is also, the United Kingdom also plays host to a lot of people. So rather than going and doing it on their territory, we actually fly those guys into London, and the bureaucrats, the civil servants in London will help teach them and train them up locally. That's why you have a lot of people who come to London and, by the way, never leave. You know, they would have been leaders in their countries once upon a time, but they get to London, maybe a student visa, or maybe, a learning visa to come and work with the government departments on doing this stuff, and then they'll never leave, and then they just decide, oh, we're going to make a better life for themselves in London and forget about helping their own country.
Our number is 888-480-5646. Do we have enough time? We got 2 minutes for another call. Just hold till we get back from break. Give people information. The number is 888-480-5646. It's Vox Populi. That number is 888-480-5646. I promise I'm going to try to get through callers quicker, but the calls today have been so extraordinary. How do people get to our information 24/7?
And by the way, I want to thank Sean, because it's a really, really great phone call.
Great question.
Really great specific. You know, the media and the left media, they always say, oh, you guys always claim that there's a stitch up and that you don't like the experts, but you can never get into specifics about what that is.
We want to tell Sean and the other people, what's the email number they can get? If you've got an idea for an article, if you want to write an article, if you want to put something forward to us, get it to us. We would love to take a look at it and put it up. We believe in citizen journalism.
Yeah.
And Sean, that's a brilliant question. Remember the call you made last time? I kind of heard about it, but didn't know enough in detail to kind of be advised. Okay, what's our website? How do people get there?
So the website is warroom.org. And if you want to get in touch with us about something that you think is pertinent, news relevant. I don't like any, by the way, I don't do the QAnon stuff. I'm not interested in it. The email address is fight@warroom.org.
Because everybody knows I'm QAnon. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, you are Q.
Q. I'm Q.
And I'm Mini Q.
You're Mini Q.
The email address is fight@warroom.org, and get in touch with us. Hey, listen, we believe in people, ordinary people out there. That's how, you know, we built Breitbart back in the day, was ordinary people out there sending us news tips, but also contributing to the
big
site.
Big time.
Well-formulated, well-thought-out, well-written articles. We're up for it.
Okay, number's 888-480-5646. Short commercial break. We'll be back with Vox Populi in a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment on the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Welcome back. Episode 93, live from Capitol Hill, 30 December, year of our Lord, 2019, 2 days left in the decade of disruption. And the curtain comes up on Wednesday on the Roaring Twenties. 2020 is here. Let's go to California. We're on Vox Populi. Our number is 888-480-5646. Raheem Kassam, Stephen K. Bannon, War Room Impeachment. Let's go to California. And Marie or Maria?
Wait, no. A much down version of this. And being very...
You have to... Okay, we have to cut the radio off the back.
US national interest, in Hong Kong.
I don't mind listening to myself.
I know. It sounds... Maria or Marie?
Well, doing all this stuff in Hong Kong. By the way, isn't a million miles...
We'll let Maria cut her radio off in the background before going to her. In the meantime, Steve, who did you want to pick up on?
How about Rich in Chicago? Okay, here's the rules, guys. You have the radio cut off. I understand it's tough to hear on the way our system is. And when they come back to you, you got to be able to punch in and roll. Rich in Chicago? We got a full board of people.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Hey, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. Belated Merry Christmas and a premature Happy New Year to you guys.
Well, thank you, sir. Appreciate that. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Listen, I've got a prediction that I think may explain a lot of the motivations behind what's going on with the impeachment.
Okay.
And it's this, that Nancy will send the article of impeachment the day after Ruth Bader Ginsburg passes away.
Okay, now, walk me through this. She's going to send the articles of impeachment. Well, how about if Judge Ginsburg stays, you know, alive until November 2nd of next year?
Well, that's what my prediction sort of encompasses, is that she knows something that the rest of the people don't know, that there are health issues with Bader Ginsburg that a small number of people know, and that explains why they're pushing these really weak articles of impeachment. Why they rushed it, and now they're hanging on to it, and they're trying to arrange the timing so precisely. I think they have information, and we know she's battling pancreatic cancer for the second time.
Yes.
I mean, very few people survive it the first time, let alone two rounds of it.
Yeah, she's been a real trooper of hanging in there.
Exactly. She's very tenacious, but she went to the hospital recently for stomach issues.
But why would you? But Rich, Rich, you sound like a smart guy. Connect me here. How does that tie to the? Or maybe I'm being, you know, inordinately slow. How does that tie to the impeachment process? Why? Given everything else that Pelosi's trying to maneuver here, right, to try to blunt Donald Trump's, you know, we've had Navarro and Curtis Ellis here for the last couple of days walking through the economics, the critical mass, these policies coming together, given the, he's now tied with Obama as the most admired. You can see kind of a sea change of how people are looking at him, the America First thing starting to get traction. Given all that, and given what Pelosi, she's got to blunt him because she sees the debate stage. She sees Mayor Pete. She sees Klobuchar. She sees Bernie. She knows none of these people. Joe Biden. They're not gonna stand up to Trump. Given all that, how does the Supreme Court and Ginsburg tie into that?
I think that it's. I mean, we've seen the judiciary being transformed by Trump over the last few years successfully, and if she gets another Supreme Court nomination, especially in his first term, it's going to rewrite things for a very long time.
Oh, you're saying that she wants to hold it because once she drops it after Ginsburg died, there's going to be a firestorm to make Kavanaugh look like a...
Exactly.
I get it. Okay, Rich, thank you very much.
Delegitimize any... Yeah.
Thank you so much. Brilliant thing. So is Raheem. His point is, and we're going to get to the rest of the calls here shortly. His point is that... She, and you said this earlier today, you walked in, or other people in the war room saying a little bit of the momentum, she's lost momentum. She was driving this from September 24th all the way through. She was on the attack. She was on the offense. Now she's kind of in this netherworld. She's trying to do a rear guard action, to get more evidence, or to get any evidence into this, as the New York Times story shows today. His point is, she holds back until Judge Ginsburg expires because that's when the left will literally go through meltdown, particularly in the fact they'll say Mitch McConnell double-crossed us because he lied to us. This is why we didn't have Merrick Garland in, because they couldn't do it in an election year.
Yeah, I still think it's...
You think it's a reach?
It would just be relying on too much. You know, too many things that are coming together at the same time. I respect anybody that and Rich that thinks these things through.
Yeah,
and
no, I like the fact that Rich was connecting a couple of
puts
dots.
Together
here.
The dots. I just think here's the thing: a lot of people.
But Rich is onto something. There is going to be a meltdown if Judge Ginsburg.
Course,
and by the way,
course.
We don't want to express she was Scalia's best friend on there. She's tough as boot leather. She's been a brilliant juror. She served her country.
Yeah.
She's very ill. What I admire about her. Is she ain't quitting. Yes. I mean, most people that had this type of cancer and had that sick,
they would have stayed.
They say, hey, look, I want to, you know, get my stuff sorted. Yeah. She shows up for work or she's taking the conference calls, et cetera. But the left is going to melt down worse than the Kavanaugh situation when her seat comes up.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I don't want to do down on anything that the previous caller said. But my point is, these guys, the Democrats, Nancy Pelosi especially, they're struggling to keep up with the day-to-day. Yes, I'm sure that there was some kind of original plan, but right now it's very much just adapting to the circumstances.
You've never bought the master political strategist.
I don't think she's not a good political strategist. I just think we're now in territory, you know, you see this political story, it's uncharted. She doesn't know. You can see it, by the way. If you can interpret what she's saying between denture movements, you can.
Oh, wow. Hey, stay classy. Stay classy.
You can hear the.
That's our watchword here.
You can hear the panic in her voice. And when she goes up there and she talks about these things and she tries to answer the questions, it's clear now that there is no master plan. There is no strategic vision. It's a minute by minute play here.
But Rich, I love the way the guys in Chicago think, though.
Yeah.
Right. That's good. Okay.
Well, they've seen a lot of chicanery in Chicago.
Do we have Maria on California on, or did we lose that call?
I believe we still have Maria on line three. Let's try and
Maria on line three. Do you have your radio off? Can we take you, ma'am?
Impeachment. Yes.
Yeah. Can you cut? You just got to cut the radio off in the background.
I just did.
Okay. How you doing, ma'am?
Yes. Who am I speaking with?
You got Raheem Kassam and Steve Bannon.
Oh. Okay. Thank you.
What do you got for us today?
I got AOC for you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
You
give
keep
it to
on
us.
Saying, can you understand me?
Yes, ma'am. I don't see any clear.
Oh, thank you. I was told that my accent was too bad for radio, so I wasn't sure if you could understand me.
No, I understand
but
perfectly.
Anyway.
Okay.
Yes. I think.
You're not going to pick on AOC now. You're not going to pick on AOC. AOC is my. Come on.
No, I'm not.
Okay, fine.
I'm just going to give you a few ideas where you can find a few AOCs.
Okay, oh, good. Now you're paying attention. We're looking for AOCs. We want our own bartenders in Congress. I like her policies. I don't like her policies prescriptions, but I like her grit. I like her determination. I like her verve, her energy. So where are we going to find them, Maria?
I think there are plenty of them on YouTube. There are many patriots that need help, and they have their own channels, and they support the president, and every day they work hard, but there are no support for them. And my research on AOCs are that they were put there, that she was found through casting.
Yes, exactly.
Hold, you know. So, I mean, the Republicans need to do the same. I mean, we have plenty of AOCs, but they're not getting any support, basically.
Marie, can we ask you, could you hold? What we'd like to do is have our producer, what we want to do is get to you offline and talk and get your list of big people that are on these YouTube channels, and we will investigate that. I think it's a fabulous idea, and I appreciate the fact that you're following along at home. In hearing the fact, I keep saying we need our AOCs. We need these young firebrands that have had to work as bartenders. You know, AOC had that. She had the, what is it, the night shift. She had to close up the bar, right? We need, those are the people we need. We need those type of young people coming forward and standing up for the principles of populism and economic nationalism, President Trump. So I appreciate your call. If we can get the producer, if Vish, if you can guys work with the Richmond Central Command, and let's get Maria. We want to get all your things, and I tell you what, Raheem, we'll put them up on the we'll put them up on the site.
Yeah,
this is the kind of thing. This is regenerating, and you know, Raheem's got a great eye for talent.
I'm not a YouTuber, but I've been on YouTube, and I think Maria's correct. And what's really interesting is a lot of these people. a couple of years ago were making so much money on YouTube that actually going into Congress, A, would have been a step down in terms of their influence and their reach. They were reaching so many people. And B, it would have been a massive step down in terms of what money they were making. So it would have been a hard sell. Nowadays, since these social media giants have been crushing conservatives and crushing populist
talk to people how that's happened.
Oh, I mean, it's. I think most people out there probably know even better than I do. But I mean, I manage my own big Facebook page and my own Twitter account and all this. And I've seen, you know, we live this stuff day to day, right? Hour to hour. What should we post? What do we want our audience to read? We curate the content, videos, images, memes, pictures, articles, all of that stuff. And we've seen, look, they've said it outright, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, all these guys have said it outright that they're going to sit on the conservative pages. They're not shy about this stuff anymore.
Because it's hate speech.
Because it's hate speech. And then secondly, I can say from personal experience that and I was complaining about this recently, privately again, you know, my page used to reach about 10 million people a month, right? Just the Raheem Kassam public page on Facebook. Now I'm posting better and often more content, and the reach is down to about 4.8 million a month right now. And there's nothing changed on my side, right? I've not changed anything. If anything, we're putting out better content. We're putting out more of this stuff.
Is this, you believe, because you wrote two books that and I thought both of them were excellent, the No-Go Zone book, and then you wrote the book about Enoch Powell? You think that had something to do with it?
I think it's more like that they see how many people are sharing things they don't like shared. Right, whether it's articles from right-wing news sites that they don't like, whether it's memes that are, you know, hate speech or whatever it is, they're seeing just how many people are flocking to these things. My appearance on Fox the other day, 150,000 views on Twitter in a matter of hours. I posted a thing about Britain's National Health Service to my Facebook page yesterday. It got something like 600,000 impressions on people sharing it and those sorts of things. And the left and the people that run these digital firms, they load that, so they tweak the algorithms, they change it. You don't pop up in people's feeds as much. I get so many people every day, Steve, telling me I have notifications on for you, Raheem, and I don't get them delivered.
Here's what I like, what Maria said in California, and this shows what the power, I think, of this show and really the power of the base that we talked to. She connected a bunch of dots. She had heard me say, and she had followed an AOC, that AOC was recruited. They did a very smart recruiting. I got no problem with that at all. She was recruited. I say that the AOCs of the world have been curated. This is how you get a Mac. We had a guy call earlier from Staten Island, Vinny, who talked about Max Rose. You had
I'll tell you who could beat Max Rose is Vinny.
Vinny, we got. I don't know, Max is going to be tough, but I think Vinny's the guy who could go up against him. But you had these people that were former military officers, Mickey Sherrill in New Jersey 11. You had CIA agents. You had, you know, these were curated. AOC, they were curated. What Marie said is that, hey, we can do our own curation. We can do, she called it auditions. She was auditioned. And those auditions her argument was, it's on YouTube right now. That's a clearinghouse, because you can see how they're doing. You can see the traction they got. And so I think it's a smart way to think.
Well,
this
our side has been a little bit hypocritical on all this for a very long time. We're very quick to use the Buckley line, the first 100 people in the phone book rather than the faculty at Harvard or thing. But we're the ones who never go to the populist base to recruit our candidates.
Too many lawyers.
Exactly. And it's about time that we have our own base, like AOC was the left's base, coming through, rising up. Yes, it requires a casting call. Fine.
Right.
Let's do
it. Let's do it.
We can do it right here. Here in the war room. Right. I don't mind interviewing people live on air.
I like it. Let's go to our next one. You pick it.
Warren in Orlando on line two.
Warren in Orlando, how can we help you today, sir?
Yeah, I was just calling about the thing they were talking about with the NGOs and stuff.
Yes, sir. This is the social, the civil society 2.0.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, what they have is, what they're doing is, that's all just part of, they have something called anti-corruption something, whatever, all these NGOs. And they are being funded by our government. They're getting hundreds of millions of dollars, and they got Soros involved with it. And it just seems like they're running our foreign policy.
you think that they got too much involvement in getting involved in these NGOs. You don't know where they end up, that you've got all of a sudden they got some of these NGOs going after Orban, et cetera. And so your recommendation, you'd want the State Department out of all that. You don't want any donations, no, even if it's on anti-corruption or things that we should be focused on.
Well, what it's doing is it's ended up, there's doing these so-called regime changes. And they're getting people to riot and take over, you know, change governments. Mm-hmm. That shouldn't be part of our State Department's job. And they're also just, it's a lot of money involved. And you know, it's when you got money involved, they're just, it's just like a piggy bank, you know?
Warren, right before I let you go, would you support the protesters in our insurgency? We had Michael Yon on hours ago in the John Frederick Show. Would you support the State Department getting money to them to support that? Or are you just saying across the board, no way?
I don't see what this regime change thing is even worth, unless it's really vital for some reason. I mean, the whole thing is, it just seems futile, you know?
Warren and Orlando, thank you very much. Raheem, thank you very much. Great call. So he's taking it to the thing I was trying to get you to say, hey, this is something we shouldn't be involved in.
I know what you're trying to get me to say.
Well, no, I think, no, but he's given the real America First. Yes. Remember, the America First, the America First movement has got a little bit of Kurt Mills and Warren, which is, we shouldn't be engaged in that. We're not isolationists, but it's not our business. Let it evolve naturally. And then you do have what I say, where it's in the vital national security interest of the United States. It should be in our vital, our allies' national security interest. Then you've got to get engaged. Who else we got? We want to get as many calls in as possible.
Yeah, and I just want to make this one point. We're going to jump to Ran in Oklahoma on line one, but I want to just mention this. They're not non-governmental organizations. Okay, let's get away from using NGOs. They're what we call quangos in England, quasi non-governmental organizations, because they get the lion's share of their budget from government.
This is what Warren said. Hey, it's not millions of dollars. It's hundreds of millions of dollars.
But they don't have any. There are no ways the electorate can hold them to account, despite them using the electorate's money. So they're not non-governmental. They are quite governmental. They're quasi non-governmental organizations.
I never figured out what quango means. Now I know. Quango. So you learn something new every day. Okay.
The quango state. Line one, Ran in Oklahoma.
Ran in Oklahoma on line one. How can we help you, sir?
Hi, Steve. Hi, Raheem.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you? I'm from China. I'm currently a foreign student living in the U.S. I'm calling to express my gratitude to you guys, especially Steve, because you mentioned Hong Kong so many times in your broadcast, and so glad that you can let people, like American audiences, know what is happening in Hong Kong. And also, I'm also very thankful that you said the Chinese people from the concept of CCP, like the and that is really important.
Let me ask you for a second. Thank you so much for the call. It's one of my great focuses, because I've spent so many years in and around China and have a great admiration and love for and affinity for the Chinese people and Chinese culture. But can you tell our audience, you've got a global audience here, what is the situation with the CCP against the people in China, old hundred names, which are the deplorables of China, and what is the situation with the young students in Hong Kong?
I believe Ran had to.
Oh, we
had
lost
to,
her.
Had to drop. Yeah.
I think the CCP knocked it out. But anyway, we're very thankful for the call. It's a great passion of mine.
I want to go to April, who's calling in from Australia.
Wow.
And I want to stick on a similar theme here, that we've talked about the NGOs, we've talked about the funding, we've talked about all of this stuff that was raised by Sean earlier on in the call. April in Australia, welcome to the show. Do we have April?
Here we go. April, how you doing?
Yeah, good. I guess what I'm interested in is hearing your thoughts on how you see the Australia-US alliance. I think down here we're a little concerned about China's scope creep into the South Pacific, and you know, and have a sense of vulnerability, especially in terms of cutting off the Straits of Malacca Straits. And so, for example, we've only got probably 2 weeks of fuel supplies in terms of reserves, in terms of our energy. We have no energy security. And I guess we look to the U.S.
as a strategic ally and hopefully someone who would come to our assistance.
As you remember, in World War II, you know, it was absolutely vital that our alliance with the United Kingdom and particularly with Australia, that it became a central front of where we really built a lot of our the blowback that we eventually did against the Imperial Japanese military. Australia is central. And I said this, I've given a number of speeches online to Australian conferences. I've been interviewed by the papers there. Australia is absolutely essential as an American ally against this expansion, this radical expansion by the Chinese Communist Party with One Belt, One Road, all that. And I think, you know, Australia was the canary in the mineshaft. It was the infiltration into the Australian political system. People forget, and I've only got a couple of minutes here, but I want to make sure we pick her up and get her number. We want to include her back in this, is that it was testimony by Australian politicians and Australian writers that came to Capitol Hill at the House Intelligence Committee a couple of years ago. It got a lot of people focused on this infiltration of the Chinese Communist Party into the whole information warfare aspect of this. So I got to tell you, having patrolled the Malacca Straits on a destroyer, having patrolled the South China Sea, when war comes, if kinetic war ever comes between the West and the Chinese Communist Party, it will start in the South China Sea. Australia is absolutely the tip of the spear of that. And I will tell you, I think that you've got many, many people here in the United States that are allies to that. So we want to thank you very much. If you can hold Vish, I want to get her number and we'll thank, but it's a fantastic call. Great way to wrap up the show. Raheem, what do you got for us?
Yeah, no, I was there. I was in Australia a couple of months ago with the CPAC guys and with Mark Meadows. And the number of people who came up to us saying exactly what April said is, hey, China has us over a barrel and we're looking for U.S. leadership on the China issue. And they're finally getting U.S. leadership on the China issue out of President Trump, out of Peter Navarro, out of all these guys in the administration who are taking the fight to communist China. It's extraordinary.
And this is America. By the way, this is America first, where we're looking for, where it's in the national security interest of the United States, it'll be in the national security interest of our allies like Australia.
I would be remiss if I didn't mention everything at warroom.org, and make sure you're signed up and subscribe to all the podcasts and the newsletter. And also, given that CPAC took me over to Australia, people can remember the big CPAC conference is on February the 26th here in Washington, D.C. CPAC.org is the website if you want to come to that big conference, open to everyone.
Okay, tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., Raheem Kassam and I will be reviewing the entire decade, the disruption of the most disruptive decade in American political and economic understanding and action in a long time. But tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. live, War Room Impeachment, Raheem Kassam, Stephen K. Bannon reviewing the 2010s.